Welcome to Gola. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, and cookbook author.
And I'm Danielle Caligari, an assistant professor in Italian at Dartmouth College and a certified specialist of wine.
Hey, Danielle, what's up?
Katie, I'll tell you what's up. We are once again surrounded by wine, and this time we are looking at a couple of the, more than a couple of the bottles. Three whole bottles of one of our absolute favorite things to drink. And I actually would go farther than that because I have heard you say that this is your number one favorite thing to drink.
I love Lambrusco so intensely, so completely, so fully. Who cares about other wines, honestly? No, just kidding. Oh my God, daggers. So I love wine, as you know, but I am like infatuated with Lambrusco. I spent a lot of time in the area around Reggio Emilia, in the area around Mantua. I'm very, very into Modena, of course. So naturally I end up drinking Lambrusco, which is such a fantastic set of grapes. Because we say Lambrusco as though it's like a thing. It's many different docks. It's many different grapes. It's a versatile word. And we've done like a whole Lambrusco episode, but this one's a little bit different. This is part of a new collabo with Biondivino. The three bottles that we're going to be tasting are available from biondivino.com as part of the Gola Lambrusco 3-pack. And you can drink along with us. Or if you don't have the bottles with you right now, you can listen anyway. That's fine.
Absolutely.
I encourage it.
Do it.
But also tap that buy button, get the wines, chill them, serve them, drink them, listen to the pod as an accompaniment, invite your friends over. If you don't have friends, well, then I'm not really sure how you're supposed to drink all three bottles by yourself, but you can try.
I believe in you.
The wonderful thing about Lambrusco, it's fun, it's frizzy, frizzante, it's flirty, it's delicious. Well, it's not always flirty. Sometimes it can be like really austere and really serious, and we're going to get some of that today. So Biondivino Collabo, Lambrusco style. By the way, this is one of three boxes that Biondivino is offering. The other is a 3-pack of other sparkling, non-Lambrusco sparklings. And the 6-pack, that's like a, I called it like a little Italy journey.
Yeah.
All over.
Yeah.
But they really are in all, let's see, 6 + 3 + 3, 12
that's
instances.
Right.
Hey. I recently told you I was a mathlete, right?
That's actually true.
I was a pretty big deal in the math scene in New Jersey. So
no big deal.
In the 90s.
Is that
90s.
Some dirt on your shoulder? let me just brush that off for you.
Yeah. So what? They're great at math in the late 90s. Big deal. So in any event, we're going to drink some Lambrusco with you. Hopefully you're going to drink it along with us. And we're going to take you through the wonderful world of Lambrusco.
And it is a wonderful world. Like the wines that we selected for the 6-pack journey through Italy, and like the mixed sparkling wines that we have in our other 3-pack, the wines here are all selected because we think they're made in a way that makes them special and makes them stand out from all the other wines that are produced in Italy in huge quantities and dumped on American faces. The Lambrusco situation is in some ways even more important because Lambrusco went through some tough times. If you are our age or older, and we're not going to clarify what that means, you have been around long enough to remember some very bad Lambrusco coming into the United States, and mostly under the name of Riunite, but there are plenty of others that rode those coattails and created a situation where basically everyone thought sparkling red wine was garbage. But guess what? Sure isn't. When it's made by the right people with the right attention, with the intention to care about the land, to care about the people who work for them, to care about the consumer, as we've mentioned in our 6-pack podcast, we and you will be able to understand that Lambrusco can be a really elegant, not just delicious, but also meditative wine. And I'm already salivating just looking at these bottles, Katie. So what are you excited about when you start drinking Lambrusco? What makes that passion pop for you?
It depends on what type of Lambrusco I'm drinking. So I love to spend time at La Lanterna. Oh, what was that pronunciation?
You got it.
La Lanterna di Diogene outside of Modena, where they have a lot of like very lightly colored, vivacious, fruity, but not sweet Lambruschi. But sometimes I head over to Carpe.
What? You went to Carpe? Now I've heard everything.
I went to Carpe. Hang with my friends Luciano and Sarah. Sada, of course. Mm-hmm. Not Sarah. That makes no sense. And drink their much more austere, more intensely flavored and colored Lambrusco. Or like, I don't know, sometimes they even cross the regional boundaries, head up to Mantova. What I like is that it sort of takes you to a lot of different places in Emilia-Romagna and the southernmost county of Lombardy, each of which has such incredible food, lots of really delicious, rich things. I'm thinking prosciutto di Parma, aceto balsamico, of course, in its various incarnations, parmigiano reggiano. When I'm like in the Mantova area, especially this time of year, I'm like maybe drinking a little Lambrusco next to my fresh pasta stuffed with like pumpkin puree. It's all good stuff. It's always like food oriented. Although you can definitely have Lambruscos and aperitif. I'm always eating with it. And that's one of the things I like about it too.
Absolutely. And that's actually why we decided that this would be the ideal kind of power pack to associate with our six pack of mixed wines. Lambrusco is a wine that can do all the things that we have been talking about in all of our podcasts up until this point, but especially recently in our reflections on the wines that we drink and that we want to share with you. You can pop these bottles and drink them exactly as they are. You can take them all the way through your meal with you. You can put them to the side and drink them again the next day. Something that we've gotten a lot of questions about is, how do I open all these bottles and then drink them? I'm just one or two people. I'm in a pod right now because it's a pandemic and I'm trying to limit my contact. Don't worry about it. Wine will be there for you. Wine stays. It's not going bad. It's not like you're really weirdly over-pasteurized milk that can't be left in the fridge for more than 3 days. This wine, if tomorrow it's a little less fizzy, then you can drink it just like that and enjoy new flavors that come out as it oxygenates and becomes a whole different and even better possibly experience. So
I think that's another thing I like about Lambrusco. When you're drinking it like over the course of several days, you're kind of encountering it in the very diverse incarnations that you would have found it in the pre-modern, like pre-industrial winemaking period, before there was always like a predictable range of atmospheres in the bottle that would give you a certain bubbliness. A lot of the wine was, well, definitely pre-industry, the product of spontaneous fermentation happening in the bottle. And so the busyness would change sometimes from bottle to bottle, sometimes from, well, definitely from year to year. And so I feel like when I'm tasting Lambrusco over a number of days, I'm on that like historical journey back in time.
Nothing makes me happier than to hear that, obviously, Katie. Well, so speaking of journeying, let's go ahead and journey through some of these wines together. We're starting with Vigneto Saetti. And Katie, I know you're very familiar with this particular producer and their Lambrusco. And one of the things that you love about them is that crinkly paper sound, which is the fact that each of the bottles, which is, by the way, something that when we'll see Lambrusco, because of its kind of weird relationship with the international market, has played around with how to present itself now. Vigneto Saetti is a producer that has gone with a really kind of simple, elegant, and very recognizable higher-end bottle style. And they do have one little touch of Italian whimsy nonetheless.
Yeah, I'm actually, you're holding the bottle and I am stroking the label, which has this sort of satin embroidered thing going on. And the wine is made near Carpi, which is a famous textile production area. So the winemaker Luciano Saetti, who collaborates with his daughter Sada, they have their labels made by a local artisan in the neighboring town. And that's both for the front and the back. It's so, so, so cool. They even customize it. Like, this is imported by Louis Dresner. So
yeah,
They've stitched Louis Dresner selections on the back, and it's so cute.
Yeah, anyone who has the bottles in front of them, really literally run your hands over them to appreciate it. It feels like something that you would take off the bottle and sew onto your high school denim jacket or something like that.
Yeah, and you know, even though it looks very like fancy, this is a handmade product. Obviously, the grapes are hand harvested, but the bottles are also hand labeled. And I'm unfolding the note that Luciano Saetti personally, with his own hands, places over the cork and then puts the sort of wrapper cage thing over it. And it reads, "After years of attention and care, Vigneto Saetti has concentrated on quality, hence reducing the quantity produced, obtaining a grape where its natural equilibrium and unique qualities allow for a wine production without any addition of sulfur dioxide. To maintain this wine, we follow only the oldest and simplest traditions, the natural fermentation of grapes, signed Luciano Saetti. Props for having English, native English speaker edit this. I love
Absolutely.
This.
Yes,
this is beautiful. But I mean, it's also like a tender message, and it's something that, like, whether you are reading this message or not, if you just like spend 2 seconds with Luciano and his family, you instantly feel that they are dedicated to just like coaxing the grapes into the bottle and having the fermentation happen and presenting you with a wine that is so much rooted in their land.
Well, Katie, it's time for us to actually drink this. So Yay. Here we go.
Yum.
A short pour because we've got multiple wines to get through.
Such a beautiful, like not a super like dark red color, but it's red, lots of like little viola things going on, which makes sense because the fantasy name of this bottle, Rosso Viola.
Viola. Absolutely. Color's beautiful. Nose is, it's as I'm tasting this, I think of this as a very, very elegant Lambrusco, and it is, but having opened it fresh for us to taste right here, I do get a little bit of that, not inelegant, but more rustic kind of sense off of, there's just a tiny bit of funkiness, a little bit of something that smells like a cheese wrapper after you've opened something that's got a little age on it, a little of that really kind of cavey, earthy fermentation. And I'm really impressed by how many layers I have here. The space that we're talking about, as you said, Carpi, known for textiles, known for actually now also being kind of almost a center of industry to some extent, not least because they have created a new transportation hub there. So it's not a place that's necessarily as associated with the artisan as much as it was historically. And now drinking this bottle, I kind of feel that tension present there, both this extreme attention and care that creates a streamlined and clear vision for the product that they're trying to make, but also one that obviously has a profound attachment to the earth and the territory.
Yeah. And like in a very literal sense, the grapes that go into this bottle are the Lambrusco Salamino variety. They were planted in 1964, which is right on the cusp of a big Lambrusco boom in the area in the 1970s when Lambrusco was planted, where previously there had been orchards and walnut forests. And when you experience Carpi or other parts of Emilia-Romagna today, you're looking at a really transformed landscape, one that used to have an incredible biodiversity that has really been subjected to the devastation of monoculture.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to dive in and take a sip.
Mm. Do you want to tell everyone why they're hearing a little slurpy derp going on?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Provided our professional equipment is picking up.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. We're making a lot of noise one way or another. So a traditional tasting technique would have you pour the wine and leave it totally untouched. Take some notes on what you're seeing in the glass before you get in anywhere near it, basically. So we talked about color. We talked about the bubbles or the level of atmospheric pressure in the bottle that leads to a certain feeling of carbonation. We will then move on to getting a really intense sniff out of the glass, trying to pick up on any of the flavors that we were talking about before. So I was saying I sense a rusticity. That's a super snobby way of just being like, this doesn't smell to me like an ultra polished version of like California. I'm saying it like on one of those sketches, California, California, Cabernet Sauvignon. This is a wine that has a clear identity, but it also has a little bit of volatility. So I'm enjoying both of those things. And then as I'm tasting it, I'm introducing oxygen into my mouth and kind of almost gargling, but on the tongue rather than in the throat, in an effort to let that oxygen help the wine to open up. The same way that you leave the tannic red wine open on the table for a couple of hours so that it, by being penetrated by oxygen, the aromatics are released. Now I'm doing that within my own mouth, as are you.
I'm not doing that because I actually drank my wine.
Katie's deep in.
So. I'm not doing what you're doing at the same time that you're doing it. So I'm so sorry. I told you I love Lambrusco.
I know. Well, this is it. Now we're there. So Katie's having
also, a short pour. Like, what do you expect?
I'm sorry. I'm trying to be professional here. All right. I guess we're drinking. The flavors I get off of this are the flavors that I expect to get out of Lambrusco in a great way. I mean, they're singing, and they're singing a song that I love. It's violets, it's berries, it's a little bit of that earthiness, but not as much as the kind of herbaceousness that we, if you've already listened to the six pack episode, have talked about and that you've heard us talk about before with other Italian beverages, in particular things like vermouth and things that kind of bring in these unusual herbs that are specific to certain regions. This is more of a literal earthiness. This has a kind of dirt taste, and that doesn't necessarily sound appealing, but it actually grounds those high notes of berries and of blooming flowers in a perfect way. You can quickly imagine how this would just go beautifully against something that many people by now are probably on board for, but it's certainly worth pointing out, pizza.
Yes, the Lambrusco pack, Lambrusco in general, especially artisan Lambrusco, is great pizza wine.
Oh, it's fantastic, so good. Pizza wine. It just has an amount of acid that sears the tongue, literally. And this is a kind of wine, and this is actually probably something that's good to point out as we were thinking about kind of tasting technique also. It has so much acid that it feels more carbonated than it actually is. You may have had the experience of tasting a wine that isn't carbonated at all in any way, and in any whether through secondary fermentation or otherwise, that nonetheless tastes carbonated on the tongue. And that's because if the acid level is high enough, the wine will literally dance on your tongue. It kind of jumps off. And this has that, has a combination of those two things. It has the natural secondary fermentation that happens in the bottle that gives it these bubbles, but then it has a really biting acid that is so good with pizza because pizza has so much going on. Pizza has the fattiness of cheese. It usually has a tomato base or other kind of rich acidic vegetable component. And it may have meat or other kind of complicated toppings, as both great and important pizza aioli are making now, but also some of the simple, whatever you can get your hands on pizzas are coming into our doors right now under the current circumstances. And this Lambrusco, you can easily imagine it, even if you don't have those things in front of you, just kind of gliding right along with you through all of those foods, no problem.
So when you're talking about the secondary fermentation happening in the bottle, that's a big distinction that separates this artisan Lambrusco from the Riunite, like massive industrial styles, which in the 70s pioneered the Charmat method. That's the sort of autoclave fermented wine where the bubbles are actually produced in these large stainless steel vats. Many Lambrusco makers will berate the style of production, saying that it actually, like, it kills the wine, it neutralizes it, it strips it of any real character. And actually, you know, in many senses, homogenizes the flavors that should be quite different, considering there are a dozen major Lambrusco grape varieties that are used in the various DOCs and IGPs of Emilia-Romagna and the southernmost part of Lombardy.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important point, Katie. And since we're tasting Lambrusco here, I don't think we want to force everyone to go through a full description of how all sparkling wines are made, but you can go back to one of our other episodes on Prosecco, on Lambrusco, to hear a little bit more about this. And in the meantime, we can give just a quick indication of the fact that each of these bottles are fermented, have their secondary fermentation, which is to say a still wine is made, that wine is held, then bottled, then has more wine introduced in order to provoke a secondary fermentation inside the individual bottle. And it's really important. I mean, each of these bottles is literally unique, right? It cannot be reproduced in exactly the same way.
And that is really must. So it's unfermented. It still has the sugars from the grape juice.
Sorry. Yes. And by doing that, then it becomes something alive and itself in each bottle. So everything we're drinking here is going to be its own thing, not just from wine to wine, but even from bottle to bottle within the same winemaker's cellar.
Yeah. And when I was visiting a site, they actually showed me how they prepare the bottles, which is always super fun to watch because you can watch YouTube videos, but it's always cool to see it in person. They essentially invert the bottles as before it's like labeled or anything. They freeze the neck of the bottle, which is where the yeasts that are like exhausted from the fermentation process have like trickled down, and any other sort of sediments are stuck in the neck of the bottle, which is frozen. They open the bottle.
And And it goes.
And, yeah, it like shoots out this yeast plug, I guess, for lack of a better term.
That's actually literally what it's
called. And then they cork it, and then it gets hand bottled, and over the cork you get the cap. the little note card, and then the foil goes over that. So it's like, you know, it's a labor intensive process. It's beautiful to watch.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And this actually, the bottle tells us this, the degorgement took place on the 20th of January, 2020.
Another important thing to note, the amount of value that you're getting in these bottles is honestly mind blowing. You don't usually find out disgorgement dates, even on higher end champagnes, let alone Lambrusco, which does not get that kind of respect. So consider that. And then also consider the fact that we're working at 11.5 alcohol here. I mean, everybody's going to hear me say this about a dozen times in the course of these podcasts, but wow, get me a crazy straw and pop it right in that bottle. I could drink this all day long. What else do you want? Something that tastes this good, pairs this well with food, can easily be drunk by itself, and will allow you to have a happy holiday kind of buzz without ever getting to the point where you need to go to bed. It's everything in one.
Keep it rolling, yeah.
Yeah. Well, keeping it rolling, we got to move on to our next Lambrusco. Katie, what do we got?
So we have Ca de Noche, which means like walnut farm, Sottobosco, 2019. And this is the product of organic wine production certified. All the wines essentially have been made with organic or biodynamic methods. But the little label says organic agriculture since 1993. And that's, in fact, exactly when Giovanni and Alberto Massini started this vineyard. They also have a number of Lambruscos, so they need a fantasy name to set it apart from the others that technically legally fall under the same category. The legal name of this wine is Emilia Rosso Bio, IGT. And because they make wines that also fall into that sort of nomenclature, Sottobosco is specifically referring to this version. So it's a sparkling wine. I'm just reading the label, using a mix of grapes, Lambrusco Grasparosso, Lambrusco Montericcio, and Malbo Gentile. And they are delicious when blended together.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you.
Well, let's just find out how delicious. Oh, yeah.
The color of this is like almost purple. It's,
yeah, it's
gorgeous. But like, is garnet a color or is that red?
Well, so this is, I would actually call this something. Well, I would say that this has more of these kinds of violet notes in it, right? Mm. That's the thing that it's leaning towards. It's closer to in the red to deep purples than in the red to oranges and browns. It's
so I just simply don't know what the word garnet means.
It doesn't matter.
I told you I was a mathlete.
Yes.
So I couldn't get bogged down with the intricacies of the English language. So we're very close to Reggio Emilia, which used to be a blanket of walnut forests. This is where there are basically two major Nocino or walnut liqueur productions in Italy. One is based in Campania. The other is based in this part of Reggio Emilia. And so just imagine like how the land would have looked when there were just, you know, it was blanketed with walnut trees that would be bursting with fruit that starts to sort of mature in June through the summer.
And I have imagined at length what that must have looked like because, as you know, Katie, one of my all-time heroes is the Countess Matilda of Conossa, whose property extended around this very area of Emilia-Romagna. This medieval countess was a woman who inherited the property in between the space occupied and controlled by the Holy Roman Emperor and the Pope. And in the late Middle Ages, this was a very contended political space. And I have not spent as much time at wineries there as Katie has. Instead, I've spent a lot of time in archives and at the fortress of Matilda of Canossa, which towers over this in an area that really becomes magical in the sense that it feels like something magical might happen to you. Like it's in the late evening there, fog rolls in. It's
because there's a lot of water that rolls through this part of Italy in the form of streams and rivers. In fact, the vineyard's pretty close to the Crostolo River.
Yeah. And you just wandering around there, everything feels kind of like an in-between space, like you're in between the natural and the supernatural. And this Lambrusco is surprisingly capturing that even better than I thought it might. It is less expected than what you get in the bottle of Saetti. Saetti really captures exactly what Lambrusco is meant to be, really brings it back home. This Sottobosco kind of, you know, and the etiqueta, the labeling also kind of makes you think that it has this sort of full moon done in a very abstract little inquadrato here. That
it's this really cute watercolor just above Sottobosco, which means undergrowth, by the way.
Right, exactly.
So, like, you could be drinking this while like trampling on like decaying walnut branches, for example.
Perfect, exactly. And I'm getting on the nose right away that reader kind of funkiness, that earthiness, that forest feeling. And I'm jump in.
So could that also be related to this gaveta that is not on the label, but may actually be in the bottle?
I sure hope so, Katie. I will say that there is a note here that is undefinable. I mean, it tastes different. It tastes different from other Lambruschi in a great way. It's so savory. I mean, it is savory to the point of being almost briny. And I would never pull that note out when I'm tasting something like this. A lot of people would just dive for minerality, which is fine, but it's become so arbitrarily used and so loose with parameters that I don't think it's necessarily helpful.
Predictable
anymore.
Considering that the grapes grow in alluvial sand deposits, right? And yes, limestone.
Yeah, also that. But it really is, it has a kind of saltiness that is so gorgeous. I hate to bring us back to eel, but I can totally see a fatty fish with this being a wonderful pair, a wonderful, wonderful abbinamento.
So the first time I visited this part of Italy, it was the year 2000. The world was about to end, and then it actually did not. That would have been 1999.
Right.
Okay, so we were celebrating that the world did not end at the millennium. Mm-hmm. And my dad and I were on this road trip and like found this random agriturismo, and they served us grilled cheese wrapped in lardo and Lambrusco. Mm-hmm. And like, yo, I was like, this is like, I should have been born here. This is clearly where I need to be forever and ever. And then my cardiologist discouraged a permanent move.
Well, naturally. But you know what? Actually, when you're saying that, I'm thinking like Lardo also occupies this in-between space where it has that kind of intense umami, but also salty. And then, of course, that tongue covering fat. And I could, again, this is right there. This is great. And nuttiness also that would evoke the pigs eating those same walnuts, chestnuts, the blend of nuts that kind of falls onto the ground there. Just really outperforming its price point here, unquestionably, both of these. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we spend a lot of time in Italy. So whenever we're buying wine in the U.S., we're looking for great wines that we love, but also bargains that fall more within our sort of cultural parameters, like spending $70 on a bottle of wine is like a very, 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 very rare occasion, even at a restaurant where markups are crazy. So having something that's like, feels very affordable, feels like the markup is appropriate. It's such a pleasure to drink on like a sort of economic level, especially during the whole pandemic.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're looking for quantity as well as quality here.
All right. I'm excited about this one. We are leaving Emilia Romagna. And like, we should also mention that when we say Emilia Romagna, we are lumping together two culturally, historically, linguistically, and culinarily diverse regions. They're stuck together. They ride together as part of a joint region, but Emilia is its own thing.
Absolutely.
Romagna is its own thing. So really we're leaving Emilia and we're going to the Oltrepo Mantovano. As the name would imply, we're in the Po zone. The Po brings a lot of humidity, a lot of fog, a lot of like dampness. I'm like actually flashing back right now to my last Lambrusco visit to this area where I was like, I thought I was like going to be overdressed. I'm so cold all the time. It was like 60 degrees. So essentially that 60 degrees, so zero in my brain. And it was just so damp and like so foggy and so like weird and cloudy and haunted and magical, the same way that I imagine Matilde de Canosa's like little village property, her fortress.
Her fortress. Yeah, it's a fortress.
Felt like very medieval.
Totally.
Very cool. So now we are in Lombardy, in a zone that by law is allowed to produce Lambrusco. It's not just for Emilia. And so this is a DOC. I lied. It's not a DOC.
It is, yeah. Lambrusco Mantovano.
Sì, ho capito, ma dice indicazione geografica tipica.
Oh, I'm sorry. There is a dock here, but this is not made within the confines of that dock. So the regional space is a dock, but the wine itself falls outside of it in the way that many of the wines that we are tasting in general always do. And these Lambruschi do in their own way, because they're choosing not to follow the rules that have been imposed by the government, not because they're not going to impart quality, but rather because they're not going to stick to what they feel are arbitrary parameters. Because when you move into a space that is unique, you need to respond to that space. So
no, for sure. And also, like, in my travels in the various Lambrusco producing regions, many of the producers choose to declassify. So they are making wines according to the DOC regulations, but they choose to declassify because they see being part of the dock as a drawback, because they associate themselves and bring actually greater dignity to large industrial producers that share the same denomination. So they're like, peace out. We're just going to do our own thing. We're going to be an IGP. And that's what they do.
Absolutely.
So the vineyard is Fondo Bozzole. It's the legal name of the wine is Lambrusco, Provincia di Modena, IGP.
Modena.
I've got Modena on the brain, you guys.
Yeah.
Need some Yoko free dogs. Lambrusco, let's start from the top. Lambrusco, Provincia di Mantua, IGP Pizzante. And then the fantasy name is Incantabis. the vines were first planted on this property in 1970, but there was a farm there before. So like Ezio, the grandfather of the winemakers, raised cows, which is very common in the region, actually still is to some extent. And then the father took over and had a farm. And then the sons, Franco and Marco, started making like quality wine amongst the pear and apple orchards on their property, just on the banks of the Po, where it is so humid and where I get very, very chilly whenever I visit, even if it's 60 degrees.
Well, I run hot, but I will say that in any case, this Lambrusco has a depth that does make you think of chillier weather. It is, the color is deeper. The nose is, again, reaching to the savory side, but now with a lot of dense fruit on it at the same time. So we have a lovely, lovely combination here. Really delicate, almost like, there's a note that people use all the time in wine tasting, which is currant, red or otherwise currant. I'm not inclined to use that because, first of all, in an American context, I don't think a lot of people know what currants are. That comes from a UK context. But also because in the world of non-wine tasters, I don't think a lot of us make a huge difference among berries that have the same color, right? Basically.
Could be cranberry.
Yeah. So
craisins.
It's crazy to say that there. But more than anything, I haven't even tasted this yet. And I'm already thinking velvet.
Not me. Yeah, you're right.
I'm already thinking velvety. I'm already thinking richer than what we've been drinking so far. And the palate confirms. Still great acid. Again, just bouncy, lively, lovely. But behind that is a blanket. It's like a blanket to wrap you right up while you're chilly on the side of the Po there.
So this is 100% Lambrusco Ruberti, one of the many Lambrusco grapes. So just imagine that Mr. Ruberti is creeping up behind you, but not in like a sketchier, scary way. And he's draping a wool blanket over your shoulders.
Yeah.
That's tending to a fire of pear and apple tree branches.
Yeah, that actually is, I feel like maybe you should write their copy.
I am available. Usually my Rome tours are in full swing heading into the holidays, and that is not the case today. It's fine.
Well, we're going to comfort ourselves with some of this rich, delicious Lambrusco, and we're going to think about all the things that we wish we were eating with a much larger, much livelier group of people, but we're going to use this wine to carry us through those moments of quieter celebration and have a little more fun than we might have if we didn't have them with us. I hope everyone enjoyed tasting these with us. And please go out and buy not just these Lambruschi, other Lambruschi, our other sparkler pack, our other six pack of a variety of Italian wines from our friends at Bion Divino. And keep in mind that you can watch me and Katie drinking wine all the time on Instagram. I'm at Dr. Caligari's Cabinet.
I'm at Katie Parla.
And we look forward to tasting more wine with you virtually in future podcasts.
Sit back, I'm gonna go.
Arrivederci.